right, great. So let's get started. First of all, I just wanted to welcome everyone again to the Shiur, to the series. It's really nice to see everyone. I miss seeing everyone in Shul, but it's a pleasure to see you at least like this. And some of you would not be able to come to the Shul, some family members and others. So it's an honor to have you here, and I welcome all of you as well. What I want to do during the Shiur is develop another important theme in Megillat Rut and connect it to the broader idea we've been developing. So let's just begin with a little bit of background, some of the things we discussed in the last chapter, and then we'll jump into to this chapter, the second chapter. At the beginning of Megillat Rut, we have Elimelech and his family, and Elimelech and his family goes down. Elimelech's wife is Naomi, his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They go down to Moab, and then Elimelech dies. Then Naomi's two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, marry two women, Rut and Orpah. They both die after 10 years of marriage, and Naomi decides to go back to Beit Lechem. Rut and Orpah decide to go with her. Naomi says no. Rut and Orpah decide to say, we're still coming with you. Naomi says no. This time Orpah agrees. Rut says, I'm still going with. One more time, Naomi tries to say get away, and Rut says, I'm still going with. And finally, Naomi puts up her hand and says, okay, stops talking to her, and both of them go on the path. We discussed in the last shiur that there are really two themes we tried to develop. The first is the type of special self-nullifying kindness that Ruth embodies, that that prepares her for being the mother of kingship. And the second thing we discussed, the second idea, was how Ruth is returning to Avraham, returning from the mistake of Lot. She's doing tshuvah for Lot and going back from Moab and Sodom, where Lot ventured to and his children ventured to. And she goes back to the path of Avraham, to a path of kindness and a path of morality. Okay, so now we're all caught up. What I want to do in this year is discuss another theme. And we said how all of these individual points we're going to make about these chapters all connect to a broader issue, which is the relationship between Sefer Rut and Sefer Shoftim, the book of Judges. We said that the book of Rut is a remedy for the ills, the problems in the book of Judges. Sefer Shoftim, that entire period, much of it is abysmal. There's terrible societal relations. There's religiously, there's a lot of bad things happening. And Sefer Rut is supposed to be a tikkun, a remedy, a reparation for much of what happens in Sefer Shoftim. So here we're going to develop in this shiur another theme that's going to relate to that point. So let's, and just one other comment. If people want to ask questions or raise suggestions or anything, please jump in. Don't feel bashful just because we're on Zoom. We're all getting used to the technology. Okay, I want to begin with the end of the first parak. Here, I'm going to share the screen with you. If anyone can't see, just let me know, then I'll make it bigger. Okay. Can everyone see? Okay, I'm going to assume no one said no, so we'll, okay. So, here. So we're going to begin with the first section of the second parak. The last section of the first parak. So, Naomi and Ruth are going back to Moab, okay? They're going back to Beit Lechem. And Naomi and Ruth are not really talking. And now for Naomi, who's actually returning to her place she hasn't been to for more than 10 years, is going to get greeted by the woman of Beit Lechem. And what I'd like to do is I want to look at the next stage of these narratives through a certain lens, and that is the lens of Ruth. How is Ruth being treated? Okay, as we read this, I want us to think about how is Ruth being treated? How was she experiencing this return to Beit Lechem? Okay? That's what we're going to look at it for now. Not through lens of Naomi, but about Ruth. So let's take a look. Batilach l'shtehem ad bo'ana Beit Lechem. So both of them go. The psukim are emphasizing two, right? Both. And vayikav bo'ana Beit Lechem, when they get to Beit Lechem, batehom kol ha'ir lehen batomarna hazot Naomi. When they get to Beit Lechem, the whole city, or all the, you know, come out, and they say, what do they say? Hazot Naomi, is this really Naomi? Now, it's hard to know exactly what they're asking. Are they asking because they're surprised to see her? It's been so many years. Are they shocked by her appearance? Are they genuinely wondering, is this Naomi? They don't really recognize her face. It's hard to know. But Naomi's response is very telling. Naomi says, Naomi says, don't call me Naomi anymore. She says, currently, Mara, call me the embittered one. She says, because Hashem has embittered me terribly. And then she says the following. Ani milei halachti. I went out full. I had a husband. I had two sons. Berekam hashivani Hashem. And empty, God has returned me. And then she says, well, so don't call me Naomi anymore. And then the last pasuk, the last verse of this chapter, it says, Vatashav Naomi v'rut ha-Moaviyah kalata ima. Naomi returned along with Rut ha-Moaviyah, Ruth the Moabite, kalata ima, her daughter-in-law, Hashava mishdei Moav, who's returned with her from Sde Moav. Behema ba'u beit lechem b'tchilat k'sir se'orim. And they arrived at beit lechem at the beginning of k'sir se'orim, at the beginning of the barley harvest. Okay. Now, we could talk a lot about what's going on with Naomi. Naomi seems to be in despair. She's saying, change my name. Don't call me pleasant anymore. Okay, very interesting. But let's talk about Rut, right? Rut is coming back as this Moabite, Gioret of sorts. You know, she's a stranger coming back to, coming to a land that she's not familiar with. And how do the people of Beit Lechem treat her? So what do they ask? Hazot Naomi. They say, who is this? Is this really Naomi? Who do they not ask about? Rut. They express no interest in this woman, Rut. There's this, you know, woman standing, this nice young lady standing next to Naomi, but they have no interest in her. And when they get back to Beit Lechem, you're going to see how this continues. But the first point I want to make is that the psukim are emphasizing that both of them are there. And Rut ha-Moaviyah kalata ima. She's her daughter-in-law is with her, but yet they have no interest in Rut. Okay. Second point here is when you look at the underlined word, if you could see this, I'm not sure. Okay. So if you look at this underlined word, it's Rut ha-Moaviyah. It's they're emphasizing Ruth the Moabite in this verse. Now we've read the first chapter. We know exactly where Ruth is from. We need to emphasize this Rut ha-Moaviyah. We need to emphasize that she is a Moabite woman. So clearly the psukim are emphasizing this because it's trying to emphasize she's a stranger. She's this foreigner. So that's the first point. The people of Beit Lechem, the woman who maybe greet Naomi on the way back, they ignore Rut. The psukim emphasize that Rut is with her. They ignore Rut. Now what about Naomi? What does Naomi say? So imagine if you're with, thinking about, say, quarantine, right? You're with some people during quarantine. And someone asks you, how's quarantine going? And you say, oh my gosh, it's terrible. I have no one, you know, I'm totally empty. I have no one to talk to. It's, you know, I'm bored out of my mind. So what would you say to people around? Just, how dare you, right? I'm with you. What do you mean you have no one to talk to? What do you mean you're empty? It's been so boring. You're with me. You're with other people. What does Naomi say? She says, God has returned me empty. V'reikam heshivani Hashem. God has returned me empty. What's her point? She thinks, I have nothing. So one point is that Naomi doesn't really seem to value Rut all that much. But a second point is, how is Rut being treated? So not only from the woman, the people of Beit Lechem, but also from Naomi herself, Rut feels underappreciated. Reka Meshivani Hashem, she's nothing to me. Naomi has no appreciation, no recognition of Rut coming along with her. Rut's daughter-in-law said, I'm going to go with you till the very end. Right, Ruth, I'm fully dedicated to you. But still Naomi says, I have returned empty. So both from Naomi and the people of Beit Lechem who come out to greet Naomi, we see that Ruth is not being recognized. Ruth comes out, comes to Beit Lechem, and we see how the people there are not treating her with respect. They're not even acknowledging her presence. But I want to argue is this continues. So now we get to the beginning of the second chapter, okay? And here, there's two problems in the book. One is that there's no descendants for Ruth and Naomi. She has no, there's no one to keep on their legacy. But there's another problem, which is the short-term problem, namely that how are they going to survive? They just came back and they have no food. Now, it's interesting because clearly the people don't have such a good relationship with Naomi because no one gives them any food to live on. But here we get introduced to the new character, the hero of this chapter and perhaps of the book, and that's Boaz. So we're going to read a few psukim together. I want to take a look at a few phrases, which you can see closest here. The English translation is underneath. Unami moda li'isha ish gibor chayil. Now, Naomi had a kinsman on her husband's side. Ish Gibor Chayil, a man of substance. So Gibor Chayil, sometimes you think of that as like this big, strong, mighty warrior. Really, Gibor Chayil doesn't mean like someone who could lift up a truck. It means someone who's wealthy. It's a person of substance in this context. And Mimishpachat Elimelech Ushmo Boaz. And he's from the family of Elimelech, and his name is Boaz. Now, this is all interesting. It's introducing us to Boaz. You meet the hero of the story. But this actually plays no role in the narrative so far. Basically, Naomi, we're told, the readers are told by the narrator that there's this family relationship, but Ruth, the actor in the story, has no idea that this is going on. We're privy to more information than Ruth. Now, I want to explore later on, which is why exactly did the psukim give us this information if it's totally irrelevant? Only 20 psukim later, after the main story has occurred, do we hear anything about this family relationship. But yeah, right here, the psukim already introduce us to this information. My question is why? And we're going to try to get back to this later on. Next pasuk, Ruth says, "Atomer Ruth Moavia el Naomi." Ruth says to Naomi, "Elchana asadav ve'alakta bashi balim, asher emtzachim ve'inav atomer lalachi biti." So Ruth says, "Okay, I got to go get us some food. We have no food. Let me go get us some food. I'm going to go to the field, and I'm going to go glean some barley, some ears of grain, it says here, from the field." And someone, asher emtzachim be'inav, someone who I will find favor in their eyes. Atomer lalachi biti, and she says, "Okay, go ahead, my daughter." Kind of short, right? Lachi biti, go ahead, my daughter. Not a very kind way of sending her off. But there's another phrase here, which you can see bolded. It's asher emtzachim be'inav, someone who has shown me kindness. Now, I think when you look, you have to know a little bit of the laws going on behind here, behind the story. But in general, poor people are allowed to go in the fields and glean certain parts of the field. So there's a law of leket. So if they drop one or two sheaves of grain, then you're able to pick those up. One of those couple of stalks, you're able to pick those up. And if they forget a bundle of sheaves, then you can pick those up as well. But what's clear is that Rut is allowed to go do this. Now, why is she unaware of it? So it says, "Latomer Rut haMoavia." Here, I think Moavia is pointing to. She's unaware. She's a Moabite. She doesn't know. Maybe Ruth, when she comes back, and you know, we know her a little better. When she's in Beit Lechem longer, she'll learn some of the laws. But so far, she's a Moabite. She doesn't know the laws that she's allowed to do this. But I think what's so striking is that Sharem Sachem Beinav, that Ruth feels that it's somewhere where I need to dafka. I need to specifically find someone who will treat me nicely. It's not a given, right? You go to some shuls. There's a shul in Washington Heights, the Breuer Shul. I used to go there sometimes when I lived in Washington Heights. Every Friday night, I was invited out for a meal. And there was kind of places, even if I wasn't invited out, I could go over to someone and I could say, "Is it okay if I come for a meal?" And I knew I'd be answered yes. What about Beit Lechem? It's not a place like that, right? I have to go dafka, find someone who'll be nice to me. The status quo, what's a given, is that people won't be nice to me, right? And so Ruth, you see the way Ruth views this society is it's one that does not do kindness to her naturally, right? The point is that Ruth thinks of this society as that they're not going to treat me kindly. Okay, let's read one or two more psukim, and then we'll transition to something, I guess, a key point in the narrative. And then we get to something really important here. It says, and so she arrives at the field of the harvesters. It says, Vayikar Mikre. And all of a sudden, a coincidence occurred. Chalkata Sadeh LeBoaz, Hashem Mishpachat HaMelech. Oh my gosh, somehow, Ruth ends up in Boaz's field. A total chance coincidence. Now, of course, in Tanakh, there's no such thing as a total chance or coincidence. And what's clear is that there's some sort of hashkacha here. There's some sort of divine providence that's playing a role here. But the narrator is trying to say it's a coincidence. It's supposed to be, it's from the perspective of Ruth, it's a total coincidence. But we're aware that there's more going on here. Boaz comes from Beit Lechem and he says to the harvesters, Hashem is with you. And they say to him, Yivarech Hashem. And as far as the communities, they use this for bracha. Okay. So we see already three groups who don't treat her nicely, people who have fields, Naomi's not treating her respectfully, and add on the people who she returned to, the woman of Beit Lechem that she returns to, they also have no interest in Ruth at all. Finally, we're going to return to perhaps the worst character in the story, and that's the Na'ar HaNitzav Al HaKotzrim, the overseer who looks over all the reapers of the field. Okay. And so then, Boaz says to this Na'ar, says, Boaz, he says to this overseer of the fields, who is this young lady? Who is she associated with? Who is, you know, who's she a servant to? And then the Na'ar's response to the following. Bayana Na'ar Nitzala Kutzrim, the Na'ar says to him, she's this Moabite woman. He has Shavai Nami Mistay Moab. She has returned with Naomi from Stay of Moab, the fields of Moab. She said, I'm going to go and gather from the sheaves of the field, Achrea Kotrim, Atavo, after the reapers. And then he says the following. And she came and she stood in the field from morning till now. And she only went into the house to sit down very little. Now, what's fascinating here is if you read this sort of innocently, you say, okay, good. We hear the way that Na'ar is telling Boaz. Boaz is informed. What's so interesting here? I think that the Na'ar Omeid Al HaKotrim, this overseer, is actually one of the worst characters in the story because he actually distorts who Ruth is. He tries to impose a certain perspective on Ruth onto Boaz. He tries to demonize her here. Okay, that's what the Na'ar is trying to do. And that's because of Ruth's a Moabite. She's a stranger. She's someone who doesn't deserve recognition. She's an object of sorts. What do I mean? What's my basis for this? I'd like to show you very quickly six examples. First, how does he refer to her? Without a name. He says, "Vayomer Na'ara Moaviyahi." She's a Moabite woman. We know she's a Moabite. What doesn't he mention? Her name. But he feels the need to emphasize not her name, but oh, she's a Moabite. Just realize she's a Moabite. Then he mentions Mistay Moab. Right? They came back from the fields of Moab. While we were sitting here with our fields, you know, empty and in a famine, in a drought, they went from Moab. And then he says the following: "Batamod Me'aza Boker V'Yadata." She was standing in the fields gathering all day. And she only returned to the house a little bit. She's working all day long. What is he trying to say? She's greedy, right? She's staying all day in the field and gathering as much as she can, but she hasn't even rested a little bit. She's just trying to get as much as she can. That's what he's trying to portray her as. Also, Na'ar, we say Na'ar Moviyah has a negative connotation similar to Yosef when they say Na'ar Ivri when he's in the prison. But if you look at the actual words, what does Ruth say to Naomi and how does Na'ar, the overseer, relate the words to Boaz? So here there's three differences. Take a look over here in this chart. Elchana hasadeh va'alakta bashibalim. Ruth says, I'm going to go to the field and take the stalks. What does the overseer say, the Na'ar? Alakna na va'asafti ba'amarim. He says that she's going to take the sheaves, the bundles of stalks. He's making her more greedy. She's coming saying, I'm going to take whole bundles of stalks. And that's not even allowed according to Jewish law. So one thing is making her more greedy. Second, how does she plan on doing it? So he says, Va'alakta v'ashibalim. That's what Ruth says. What does he say? Va'asafti, that she's going to go gather it. Now, what's the difference between these two words? We see there's textually a difference. What's the significance? The significance is that one is a more measured performance. Alakta is more measured. And asafti is like this, you know, this kind of let me go all out and grab as much as I possibly can. It's much less refined. How do I know this? In Bamidbar, when it talks about the mun, each person went out, v'laktu, and they gathered their own mun. When there's a story in Bamidbar, though, when all the slav, this quails come, and there's so much meat. How do the people eat this meat? They say v'yasfu et hashlav. They gathered it. It's a much less refined process. And so you see, he's trying to demonize Ruth. And finally, what does Ruth say? Asher emsachem beinav. I'm going to go do it with someone who I find favor. He totally removes that point. He doesn't think of Ruth at all as this respectful woman. How does he see Ruth as this greedy person who's trying to come and take as much as possible? That's how he's trying to portray her to Boaz. Now, what I think is interesting here is that if you look at Ruth's perspective, the way she is being treated by all these different characters and society is that she's not recognized, she's demonized, and people don't seem to have any respect for her at all. They don't acknowledge her. She's just this Moabite woman. Even Naomi, her mother-in-law, says, I'm empty. I have nothing with me. That's how Ruth is being treated. Now, with that in mind, we can go and appreciate Boaz, right? When Boaz does kindness for Ruth, we understand what is Ruth missing? It's she's being treated as this object. She has no name. She's this Moabite woman. So what does Boaz do? I'd like to go take a look at the psukim just for one more moment and show you exactly what Boaz's kindness is. Boaz goes and says to her the following. I'm not sharing the one second. Here we go. Sorry. Take a look at number 8. Vayomer Boaz el Rut. This is the first time. It's not Ruth the Moabite. It's not Ruth, oh, she's this Moabite stranger woman. It's Ruth. Boaz saying, I'm going to recognize you as a person. Halo Shamata BT, he says to her, my daughter. What do you mean, my daughter? We learn later on, he's her uncle. What's BT? He's saying, you're my daughter. He's acknowledging that you're something. He's connecting her to himself. Right? That's actually very important because Boaz is a very significant man. He's this billionaire. He's climbing back to his field. He's saying, BT, I'm recognizing you. And then he says, don't go elsewhere. He says, stay here. And he says, I'm going to tell my boys not to, to touch you. And he says to stay with a young woman. Now, what's so important here about the way Boaz treats her? I'd venture to say that specifically what Boaz is doing is that he's recognizing Ruth. And when Ruth thanks him, because Ruth later on, he's going to give Ruth food. He's going to say, you can eat at our table. He's going to do a lot of other things. He's going to provide her security from the young men. But what's the primary thing Boaz does to her? Boaz recognizes her, not as a stranger, but he dignifies her. He gives her a sense of respect. He's talking to Ruth. What do I mean? What does Ruth respond to Boaz? Ruth says, Vatipola panev ishtachu arza. Oh, sorry, I'm not sharing again. Ruth says to her, it says to him, Vatipola panev ishtachu arza. She falls on her ground when Boaz says this to her, that he's going to give her food. Why have I found favor in your eyes? Why are you recognizing me? I am a stranger. I'm nothing. Ruth has it ingrained in her mind at this point that she's an other in society. She's not a name. She's not a person. She's a nachriya. That's how she's been treated by everyone else. And what is Boaz doing? Boaz is taking this person who people have no respect for, and he's saying to her, you are Ruth. You're not a Moabite. You are Ruth yourself, right? And then the point is that he's saying to her, BT, you are my daughter. I'm connecting you to me. You're not just this nobody, this nobody pauper who we can ignore.
Can I add one thing that
Rabbi?
It's interesting. There's a really nice play on the Shoresh there of Lahakir and Nochriya. Really comes out of the same Shoresh almost. And, you know, I guess it's like a question of values about, you know, do we recognize, do we see this the one that doesn't belong?
Exactly. And we're going to see that this Shoresh, just to jump a little ahead, is used once again. If you look over here, when Naomi says to Ruth, who took such notice of you? She says, "Yehi makirech baruch," the one who recognized you is blessed, should be blessed. This idea of recognizing another person and not just treating them as an object is critical. Now, this Boaz later on lets Ruth eat with his servants, and he upgrades her in society. Now, what Boaz says to Ruth is that the reason why I'm treating you so nicely is because you went with Naomi. You have left your father's house and your house, your mother. You've become an Avram figure. You've gone with Naomi, and because of your chesed, I'm going to reward you. I'd like to get back to that in a second, but what I want to explain is, why does Boaz act this way? What is it about Boaz that he recognizes the importance of being kind to someone who's a stranger in society, someone to dignify, to respect someone, even though they seem to be on the lower end of the hierarchy of society? What is it? So there's this law that we derive from Boaz that I think is really interesting. When Boaz comes back, what does Boaz say? He says to the people of Beit Lechem, he says to the reapers of his field, he says to them, Hashem imachem, Hashem is with you. And they say, Yivarechecha Hashem. And they say back to him, God should bless you as well. Now, there's a law that's derived from this, right? Boaz, the Medrash says that there were three things which the Beis Shalmata, the earthly court, decreed, and the heavenly court accepted. And one of them is that you are allowed to use God's name when you greet someone else. Hashem Yimachem, you could say God's name. Now that's shocking, right? I'm allowed to profane God's name just to say hello to somebody else. But they say you're allowed to do this. Where do I know it from? The Medrash says we learn it from Boaz, that you're allowed to use God's name when you greet someone else. Now let me ask you, right, what is this supposed to teach us? Besides the fact that we have this law, what is this teaching us? I think the point is the following. The ability to use God's name shows that this is something important. This is something holy. This is something significant. Right? I'm not just, nice to see you. But the point is that this is something God values, is to greet another human being, to respect them, to say, to greet them as a person, not as just as an object. My mother is very involved in a program called Names Not Numbers, and it's a Holocaust memorial program. But I think the title is very telling. Right? It's this idea that there people are human beings. Right? They're not to call them just to give them a number, just to write as a Naramoavia, to just whatever, ignore them, not give them any respect. Right? That's treating them as an object. Right? That's treating them as a number. But to provide someone with a name, that's the chesed, that's the kindness of Boaz. And that's what this story is teaching us, is that Boaz's lesson is that you can go in by greeting someone with God's name, right, and asking about Ruth. And all of this is teaching you the importance of recognizing people who we would assume to be, they're strangers in society. That's what this story is teaching us. Now, just a literary point. We mentioned at the beginning that the very first pasuk tells us that it's Boaz, that Boaz is a family member. Why does it tell us this? So I think the answer is that the whole time of reading the story, what are we expecting? The reader, we're expecting, okay, when is this going to come out that they're related, right? Pasuk Aleph, pasuk Bet, pasuk Gimel. Finally, Ruth says to Boaz, why are you being so nice to me? Boaz, you're treating me so, no one else in society has treated me this way. Why are you treating me so nicely? Now, what are we all expecting? We know much more because we already know from the first pasuk that she's family. What are we expecting when you get there? I'm expecting that Boaz is going to say to her, you're my family member. Of course I'm going to treat you nicely. What does Boaz say? Not that, right? Boaz says, because you've left your parents' house, you went with Naomi, you've left your home, your comfortable home, to go with her. Now, I think the point is this. They're trying to emphasize to you to realize that the reason why Boaz is doing kindness to her, it's not because of any family obligation. It's because of his kindness, right? He's rewarding kindness with kindness. He's no obligations. It's because, simply because Ruth has acted with kindness, Boaz is saying, I'm going to reward you with kindness. And it's that type of action where it's not have obligation, but it's to go above and beyond just because someone else has acted with chesed. Right? That's the type of chesed that eventually when Boaz and Ruth get married and eventually have David, that's the type of kindness we're going to need in our society for kings. I want to finish off just one minute thought very quickly. Something we're going to see later on is that names are very important in this book. And here we already see someone who doesn't treat others with respect loses their name. Who is that? That's the Nahar HaOmed Al HaKotrim. That's the overseer. He doesn't treat Ruth with respect. Therefore, he loses his name. There's going to be another example later on of this in the fourth chapter, and that's Ploni Almoni. So we'll see that later on. But already we see the importance of if you don't treat someone else with respect, you lose your own name. Because by not recognizing someone else, you're treating them as an object. Therefore, you in return, when you're codified or canonized, you yourself have become an object. He's only the overseer. The Nahar doesn't have any name. Now, we developed in the first year this idea that each theme of these chapters or the story of Ruth is a remedy for the ills of society in Shoftim. Now, if you're going to look at Shoftim, we're going to do this in our fifth chapter. The biggest problem in society, or one of the two biggest problems in society at the end of the book, is that people have become nameless. They don't treat each other with respect. We mentioned, I don't want to tip my hand with what we're going to say later on, but just as an example, what about the story of Pilegesh Begiva? She's a Pilegesh, she's a concubine, right? Once you view her as an object, once you view her as a nothing, then the whole society can go out and rape her and do whatever they want to her, because she's not a name, she's not a person. She's a Pilegesh Begiva. And we'll see all the chapters at the end of Shoftim, people lose names, right? And you're going to see how all of this connects. So, but Boaz, by recognizing other people, by doing chesed and saying, you're not just a stranger, I'm going to dignify you, I'm going to respect you, he is remedying certain problems in Shoftim as well. Now, I want to finish off with, doing pretty well on time, I want to finish off, by the way, just anyone have any questions or suggestions, anything, please feel free to chime in. Or you could reach out afterwards. Although I'm on baby duty immediately afterwards, so after that we could we'll talk. Let's finish off with what I think is just a fascinating parallel between two stories in Tanakh and a clearly intended one. And I'd like to try to spend the last few minutes trying to analyze and understand what's the significance of this parallel. So if you look at the story here with the with Ruth and Boaz, there's a few verbs, a few phrases which come up basically just in only one other place in Tanakh. Now, my point is going to be here is that these two stories are very clearly connected. What am I talking about? So first of all, it's not about mitzvah parsha, it's parsha Chayisara. That's the story of Rivka and the Eved Avraham, the Eliezer. It's that story, and Ruth and Boaz, the story we read in our chapter, are intimately connected, okay? I'd like to just show you four or five examples of this. I think it's unbelievable. What do we see in the story with Ruth? We'll go to the left side first. Hopefully everyone can see. We're going to see certain phrases. She goes and gathers in the field after the reapers. And all of a sudden, the verse says, Vayiker Mikre. All of a sudden, a coincidence occurred, right? And what happens? She ends up in Boaz's field, this family member who's going to be her redeemer, who's going to end up marrying. It's total coincidence. And it's obviously, it's tongue-in-cheek in the biblical narrative. Where else do we see a reference to God, please just make it by chance happen? Right? Where do we see a notion of Mikre? Take a look at the story of Rivka and Eved Avraham. Right? Avraham sends out his slave, his servant, to go find a wife for Yitzchak. Right, and his servant goes and prays to God before he actually gets there. He says, make it happen by chance today that I'm able to find someone for Yitzchak. Okay? Hakre mikre vayikar mikre. One connection between the two stories. Second thing, in the following pasuk in Ruth, he says, Behine Boaz, and all of a sudden, by coincidence as well, by chance, Boaz came back to the field today. Now, it's of course actually very interesting because Boaz coming to the field is not a given, right? The billionaires don't come to their field every day, right? So it's not a given. It's again, divine providence. But what we see from Boaz, Behine Boaz, Bami Beit Lechem, right? We see that, you know, coincidence again. Now, what about in the story of Rivka? Vayi tam kilala daber, he's basically finished with his prayer to God. Rivka today happens to come out to the well. Another parallel, another connection between these two stories. Now, for one that only appears in two places in Tanakh. She says when Ruth comes back with plenty of food and all the gifts that she got from Boaz, what does Naomi say to Ruth? Baruch Hu Hashem, he is blessed. Okay, so we'll see whether that's referring to God or Boaz, but she says following. His kindness has not ceased. Okay? Where's the only other place in Tanakh where it says this? Eliezer says, the servant of Avram says, that God has not ceased his kindness. Only two places in all of Tanakh where this shows up. Have I made my point? One more. It's so good. This is just, I think it might be the only two places where it also says this. What does Boaz say to her? You could stay as long as you want. He says, Adim kilu, 8 o'clock is here, surely. Take as much as you want. Don't, you know, no need to stop. Adim kilu. What does Rivka say? I will give you as much water as you need. Right? Rivka goes down to the well and she offers him to feed all his camels with water and then she offers him to come to the house. And this is what makes him realize that Rivka is the perfect partner for Yitzchak. What does he say? Adam kilu l'shtot until they finish drinking. Also, just one more. I picked this up today when I was looking at the story, so I figured I'd add it. What else happens? Boaz asks Lemi ha'na'arazot, who is this woman? What does the Eved Avraham say, the servant of Avraham? Who is this girl? That's just another one. The words aren't exactly the same, but the idea is very similar, right? You see again this type of question. Who is this woman? Now, what I think is very important here is that there's maybe two themes going on. The first is, one second, is maybe something we discussed last week. We discussed last week something about how Ruth was repairing for atoning, let's say, for the sins of Lot, right? We said that Lot left, abandoned the path of Avraham. Lot went down to Sodom. He adopted their, he unfortunately had to adopt their values. And in the end, his children become Ammon and Moab, who are promiscuous. They lack chesed. They lack kindness. They did not give bread to Bnei Israel on their way out of Egypt towards Eretz Israel. And we see that Ruth atones for him, right? Ruth go like sticking with Naomi, even though it's against her own interest, and it's a type of chesed. And I would say even in this chapter as well, right? Ruth goes above and beyond. She acts as a pauper in the field, right? She goes. She's getting harassed by all of Boaz's reapers, right? Boaz has to tell them, stop, don't grope her, don't harass her, right? She still does it. Ruth is a woman of kindness, right? She rejects the traits of Sodom. She rejects the traits of Moab, and she returns to the path of Avraham Avinu, the path of kindness. Here, I think, is another example of that. By comparing Ruth to Rivka, it's both emphasizing that Ruth is a woman of chesed, a woman of kindness, and that she is going back on the path of Avraham Avinu. So I think that's connected to the theme we spoke about last week. What I'd like to do in the last couple of minutes that we have is suggest a new idea here. This idea is sort of based off something I saw in Dr. Yoni Grossman's book, taking a little bit of a different direction, but here's what I think is important. Let me ask you the following. We clearly, God is involved here, right? Clearly, God is heavily involved in these stories. The fact that day that Ruth goes to the field, and happens to be, Ruth doesn't just go to any, happens to be she goes to Boaz's field. And the fact that day Boaz decides to come back to the field, that's no coincidence, right? That's not something that happens by chance. Of course not. And the fact that happened to be that very day Rivka came to get water for her family and to get water for their camels, again, not a total, certainly divine providence. So we see that certainly God is involved in these stories. But I think what's so important is that when we realize about divine providence, it's not just that God has to do things, it's also us, right? God can set the table, he can set the stage, but it's the person's action in the partnership that's what gets or clinches the deal. It's not just God. It has to also be the person. Could you imagine? Let's say Eved Avraham, the servant of Avraham, gets to the well, right? And that day Rivka came and he says, can you, help me out or something? And Rivka says, you know what? I'm really sorry. I'd be happy to help you out in general. Usually I'm very generous with these things. Just today, my family's waiting. I'm sorry. I have to get back. So God set the stage. He, put the opportunity on the table. But again, Rivka has to act. Rivka has to do chesed. Rivka has to do kindness. And right here, Boaz and Ruth, right? Ruth doesn't have to go back with Naomi, right? It could be God would set the table that, she go to this field by chance. But the point is, both Ruth has to do an act of kindness beforehand. She has to be willing to go act as a pauper. She has to be willing to stick with her mother-in-law against her own desire, against her own interest. And Boaz has to do kindness with her, kindness that's not necessitated by any family relationship or any societal norm. They both need to put in their own effort in order for this divine providence to work out, right? It's both man and God. And when we talk about hashkacha, divine providence, it can't just be God. It has to be both, right? Kindness, these acts, these miraculous acts, both have to be God and the act of an individual. And just to prove this point, I want to show you the following verse. And this is a famous pasuk for the following reading. There's this principle, syntactic ambiguity. And basically the idea is that sometimes psukim are intentionally ambiguous. Why? The point is that it's trying to tell you it's both. It's both of the, you're saying, is it referring to this person or that person? And the point is it's trying to tell you it's actually both. Well, let me show you this example. And with this, we'll conclude Bezrat Hashem on time in just a couple minutes. When Ruth returns to Naomi, what does Naomi say? So Naomi says the following to Ruth. Batomer Naomi lechalata, Baruch Hu LaHashem. Right? Blessed is he to the Lord. Blessed to the Lord. Asher lo azav chasdo, who has not abandoned his kindness. And achayim ve'etam etim, to the living and to the dead. Okay. Now he says, and then she tells her that Boaz is from family. That's the first time you hear about Boaz's family. Irrelevant beforehand. But we were saying it's trying to build up the suspense to highlight that it's out of kindness. Now let me ask you the question. Who is this referring to, Asher lo azav chasdo, who has not abandoned his kindness. Now, there's two ways to read it. If you look in the blue and the red, there's two different ways to read it. Blessed is he to the Lord who has not abandoned his kindness. Who is this referring to? The Lord has not abandoned his kindness, right? His kindness, that root ended up in the field of Boaz, right? And that Boaz, you know, gave this, that this all worked out. It's not, who has not abandoned his kindness, right? With the living and the dead. Or who could it be? Baruch Hu Lashem, Asher lo azav chasdo, blessed to the Lord is he who has not abandoned his kindness. It's not God. It's saying the person who is blessed to the Lord is someone who has not abandoned kindness, namely Boaz. The pasuk is vague. It's unclear. Who is it referring to? Is it referring to God who has not ceased his kindness, or is it referring to Boaz? And you see the mefarshim, the commentaries are split. Rashi says it's referring to God. Shazam mefarshes is achayim. God nourishes and supports the living and attends to the needs of the dead. Ibn Ezra says it's referring to ki osa chesed b'chila, Boaz. Boaz performed kindness. So we see that it could either be Boaz or God. What's, you know, why this ambiguity? So Professor Mordechai Cohn says the following idea, suggests the following idea. And this is in a long article of his in a Festschrift for Dr. Lamb, where he says the following. Instead of regarding the ambiguity as a stylistic flaw and exegetical nuisance, we can exploit it by viewing Ruth 2:20 as deliberately ambiguous, specifically designed to simultaneously convey both readings. I think that what he's saying here is exactly what I'm trying to argue with regard to this partnership between man and God, that both need to insert their own acts in order for miracles to happen, for these major success stories to happen, right? Sometimes, because our will is also supposed to be chesed, we're supposed to be trying to fulfill God's will. In that way, when we're so close, we're also acting in terms of kindness. God, man, it sometimes can be in a good way confused, right? The point is that it can either be both, because we're supposed to be acting in a way in partnership with God, that we're both doing acts of kindness, that it really makes sense to be either. That's how we have to be acting. And so I think the point is that when we look at perhaps here, we have to understand that, yes, God plays a role in the story. Certainly so. It's not a coincidence that she ends up in Boaz's field. It's not a coincidence that Boaz comes back that day. And it's not a coincidence that Rivka goes to the well. It's totally an act of God. But the important thing here is not that there's an act of God. It's important that these characters take advantage of that opportunity, fulfilling their obligation of kindness. And that's the important message of these stories as well. And that should serve as a guide for us, that in our own lives, yeah, we'll have all these opportunities. God may play a role in our lives, but it's about our actions that are also so critical to take the steps to make these important moments happen. So this concludes our study of the most of the second chapter. Next week, we'll look at the last few verses, and we'll continue to see how these themes that we develop play a role both in root and deliver important messages, but also will connect very much to the book of Shoftim. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.